Obviously, we had the four formal questions that we had in front of us around, effectively, what do we think the scope of an effects analysis should be and why? What do we think the timing of effects analysis should be and why? Is it on? Can everyone hear? Yep. What do you think the content of our effects analysis should be and why? And then finally, what methodology do you think we should use for assessing the effects analysis and why? And then, and I'm going to say finally, what then can we do to improve the effectiveness of our effects analysis? And I'm going to go through and we'll talk about each of those, and I'm going to say to you, so warn you now, right at the end, I'm going to say, so overall from your groups, what are the three key things that we can do to improve the effectiveness of the effects analysis? So that's going to be my culminating final question. But I'm actually going to start, in fact, with a question that I know was addressed by group one. I think it was addressed by each of the other groups, but to me it sets the scene, which is effectively, what is the main objective of an effects analysis? Because I think that's really important in terms of why, you know, the scope and all of those things. So, and to make sure that we're all on the same platform, or if we're not, what are the priorities around those? So Stephen, as the chair of group one, and as I say, I know you discussed that, did you reach a consensus as to what you felt the main objective of an effects analysis is?
I mean, I think we used the word justify. I think it was to sort of legitimize the approaches taken from the very start through the alternatives that may be considered, and then to the end, effectively giving the reasons and justification, and maybe even in fact not just justification, but there's a little bit of education in that approach, in that you're going and giving more explanation as to why we've arrived at those particular decisions along the way, from start through to completion.
Garth, did your group discuss this, and did you reach the same conclusions as to the purpose or the objectives?
We did discuss this right early on as to what was the objective of it, and I think the one point that was made was that this wasn't done just to show that due process had been done. I think there was a view that this should be something that should show how the decisions were arrived at, not necessarily to duplicate the basis of conclusion, but to show why things were happening. And also there was a view that this also played an educational role, particularly as the documents, the major ones, was showing comparison of existing standards to new ones, what has changed. Mm-hmm. And so it did help a user to understand how the implementation of the new standard was going to look like. But I think one thing that isn't quite clear is how the ISB is in fact marketing the effects analysis. Is it just another document? And so that's why the comment about due process is important. It's not just that, but there's more scope to make better use of it.
If we have time, I'll come back to that, how marketing and the difference between basis of conclusion versus the effects analysis, because I think that came up a few times. Mm-hmm. But I think what I'm hearing your group say is similar to the first group, that it is to justify, but it's also education. You both mentioned that. So, Colin, did your group talk about it and have anything different than that?
Nothing different than that. I think it was mainly justifying a bit of education and really making it clear that there's a balance has been sought between the complexity and the cost. I think it articulates that. That was what we got to.
Suresh?
I think it's quite similar. and so much so that the usefulness was very well appreciated. And it was also sort of a unanimity view that for each and every changes there should be a effective analysis, except for minor ones, but the rationale should be given as to why it is not. But a default option should be that there has to be an effect analysis done for all major changes.
Okay, which effectively does lead us on to that first question around scope, what you have said there, Suresh. And I might again go to you, Stephen, in terms of the scope question, as to what did your group come up with as to what you felt the scope of an effects analysis should be and why. So Suresh said, you know, everything. Where did you get to?
I think we were in the same position. I think it's a process you must go through in any case. So I think we thought it should be scalable. Mm-hmm. It should be proportionate to whatever the issue is. And there probably needs to be some sort of process at that very early stage up front to ensure the appropriate response to the issue in terms of the magnitude. So I think although it needs to be dynamic in that you must change if facts change, there needs to be some process where you would up front decide this is the approach we're going to take for this particular issue. And I think we felt it might be as little as, you know, a separate note somewhere, probably not in the basis of conclusion, but if it was separately stated out, and it may only be one or two lines, and in fact it may be just an annual improvement, but there should be a process and a documentation of the thought process as to why something has been done.
And did you go as far as to say who should do that process? Who should draw the conclusion as to the level or the scalability or the proportionateness? That's not a word, I know.
Yeah. I don't think we did. I think we looked at it and felt that it was a sort of an oversight responsibility, but that it's very difficult. It's a very big judgment to make up front, and there is a lot of time and effort obviously needed for this. I think my own view is that I would believe that a lot of, probably 95% is very easy to look at. Mm. It's the 5% in the middle the last little bit where you've got to really have a process. So it would be useful if there was a sort of a formal process, but I think because if you take it to the extent that I was saying and it's scalable down to the very small items, you obviously have to be able to do that fairly dynamically and quickly. And therefore, putting a big, you know, process in place, I think, would probably not work. But maybe when you're going to produce a separate effects analysis book or analysis separately, then maybe that is a decision that may have to be done through a higher oversight body.
Okay. And Suresh, you obviously, in commenting just now, were talking about the scope, and you felt that it should be done. Your group felt it should be done for everything. Did you talk about how you determined the level for everything and whose responsibility? And Stephen talks about, well, if it's a book, you publish it. But how do you deal with the flexibility?
I think we did discuss about it. I didn't say for everything. We said that it should be a default option. But for if there are minor changes, smaller changes, it need not be. But proper discretion should be used. We thought it is appropriate that the board does it, takes that view. And we also debated saying that since there is no black and white and there has to be a balance, there will be an element of discretion and may not be all the world, everybody would agree. But as long as we default to the extent of giving more rather than not giving, will be good. But one more thing that we talked about is that the labeling, because given limited time, more minor issues need not have an EA, not necessary. However, labeling should be made with care. That is, narrow scope amendments label for prepayment seemed inappropriate given its significant impact on IFRS 9. Relying on BCs was not sufficient. So it's important. There is an element of discretion, but we thought it is very taken care of in a proper manner, in a balanced manner.
Okay, I'm going to come back onto this discretion thing because I totally agree with you, but we do know that the greater world out there is always very good at being critical of the decisions made, and if there is no process, how we justify that. So we'll hopefully come back to that one as well. Colin, your comments on scope?
Yeah, very similar themes from our group. I think we talked about rebuttable presumption that every amendment, new standard would have an effects analysis, and I think that then it distilled down to proportionality. I think we discussed a little bit about the IFRS foundation could be challenged if there is no due process or evidence of due process, because there's always some contrarian who could say you haven't considered this, that or the other. So we thought it was kind of protective to the IFRS foundation as well to have this evidence of due process. We also talked about the scope more generally, about building in macroeconomic factors and how realistic that is, because clearly when accounting standards change, they kind of have broader implications, and I think that was something that some of the people in my group felt quite passionately about, that should be considered as part of the process, not just a purely technical perspective, a broader economic perspective.
Okay, and Garth, anything more or different that your group had?
Yes, I think that while we had a lot of overlap with what the other groups have said, I think some of the points were made is that at the moment, if you look at it, it deals with it quite differently through the process, whether it's a discussion paper, exposure draft, or standard. Our view was that, in essence, you should be having a starting document, and then instead of changing it, is building on it as you go through the process. Regarding the flexibility, we also felt that maybe something that might have to be considered in certain circumstances is you might have to build more information up front, particularly if you feel that there's going to be resistance by industry to whatever you do need to do. And then as far as the costs are concerned, that maybe they can also be looking at breaking down what are the costs to different groups. I think at the moment the cost seems to focus more on the preparers. Are the costs involved to the other groups as well?
So you considered that within the scope or within the content of, I mean, I know we're sort of mixing them
well
up.
Well, I think the scope determines the content.
Yeah, okay. And you have actually nicely linked to the next question, which was around timing, and I'm going to try and summarise, if I can, right at the end of all of this, as you say, that they are linked. And in terms of the timing, you alluded to the fact that you might build from a research to an exposure draft to a standard. So you do see that effects analysis, or your group felt that effects analysis was valid throughout the process. So the timing, talk to us a little bit more about what your group talked about in terms of timing.
Yes, I think as far as the timing is concerned, as we said, it's something that you should build on, but it should also be flexible in that you don't want to have a boilerplate approach. That different standards, whether it's a main standard or interpretation or amendment, you might want to deal with them slightly differently. I think that was the main point. So.
Suresh, from a timing perspective, your group's comments?
Yes, I think the earlier in the standard setting process would be useful. At the commencement of a project, full EA need not be, but should be considered. EA should be better if released before publication of a standard. It will enable identifying the gaps. And post-effect analysis required to see whether the expected effects has taken place. And the other one important thing was, in some instances, there is a macroeconomic impact, that is effects of long-term insurance contracts. But these are better discussed earlier rather than after the standard is issued. May create uncertainty for preparers and multinational companies.
Okay, just on the post-effect analysis, because I think I'm right in saying that we have not done post-effect analysis before. Is that, and coming back to that concept that we initially heard around feasibility and practicality, and we do a post-implementation review of standards, What did your group see the point of the post-effects analysis, if you like, in terms of a cost-benefit around doing that? I mean, I can understand, did we get it right, but does it matter?
In the sense that, let's say, there are certain assessments made, and there are certain problems in the discussion paper were there, some having got addressed, some have not got addressed, or some has been sort of kept quiet about. So the whether the perception or whether the effect of all that has happened post-implementation, post-release, is what people thought that, the group thought that there has to be a proper discussion by the board on these issues.
Did others talk about doing effectively a post-effects analysis? Did your group talk about that, Colin?
Yeah, we did, but I think I was maybe conflating that with a post-implementation review and thinking of it as kind of the same thing, to be honest. But I think there's value in those. I think, you know, to be fair to any constituent who are responding and also the ISB, you can't see all things that will fall out of a standard, so there will be things that are unintended. And I think it's a good way of sweeping those up and making sure that any remedial actions taken, some narrow scope amendments, is definitely a good control to have around the process. So we just talked about it as part of almost part of the process. Yeah.
So potentially the post-implementation reviews potentially could be expanded a bit to include some of the effects analysis rather than do a completely separate is where you're and you're not
linking it, yeah.
Did either of your groups talk about this?
Not really. And I think we did talk, because I do see it as a process, I think we already have the post-implementation. And I think as part of that, you will get something that you didn't expect. Mm. And I think that's when you start the effects analysis again. And I think it's a circle. So, yes, that isn't what we expected. Mm-hmm. This is the difference. This is the issue with accounting for this. And therefore, this is the impact. And you go through, I think, and that's why I said I think it's for everything, but it depends on the degree of impact that it would have. So it might be a very small change.
We also discussed it as well from the perspective, is there something that the board itself could learn? Mm-hmm. In that there might be unintended consequences from it, and then that can be built into the future. So we thought that is something that should form part of the post-implementation review as well.
So I think what I'm hearing is post-implementation reviews, maybe just looking perhaps at the scope of those around that particular... Sorry, I picked on one particular thing you said, Suresh, there. One other thing that you talked about going through the process, and it was a specific comment, I think, again, that came from an individual, but I think was discussed in groups around, in fact, releasing a effects analysis after the standard has been released. And is that the right timing, or is it too late then? Does it need to be done before? So that comes clearly to me in terms of the timing, but if you build, maybe that's not, you know, right from the start, maybe that's not a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, I see it as being, you know, I put down a note here, walk the talk. In other words, this is a process that I think the ISB should follow, and they should be following it throughout everything, and it should be part and parcel of everything they do, rather than this is a separate thing we do of effects analysis. Yeah. So it's really a mindset change, or maybe not a change, but it's getting that transparency around the decision making. So I think it needs to be with the standard.
Yeah.
In fact, we discussed this issue also and said that should we end all there? And in fact, the representative from the board that we had, and she mentioned that it is not the end all, because we continue to look at the effect analysis at the board level. And we said, is there a way to get that more transparent in terms of not publishing but putting it on the website? And she said the process involved in terms of doing an assessment versus putting it on the public domain is far different, and it will be limitation of resources. So if we can find a way about it, it's good. Otherwise, I think what the board does is pretty adequate.
And effectively, I think what I'm hearing you all say, in fact, is, make it part of the standard setting process. It's not, Garth, as you said, just we can tick the box and say we've done due process. It's actually a fundamental part of understanding what we're doing when we're writing the standards. And that's not saying it's something new or different from what we're doing now, but that's the core of what this should be all about in terms of the timing and the scope.
Okay. And it's kind of iterative, right? Yeah. So it'll start at your best endeavours, but then the facts will evolve over time, so you've got to keep it live, and it's completely embedded in the process.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, there'll be an output, but it needs to be tracked all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
By the way, one more interesting thing we discussed is that while this is under implementation for last, say, 1 year, what about some of the standards getting an effect analysis for even the past standards? And I think there was an interesting discussion, and they said that if we cannot make any retrospective changes, is there a point in doing them at all? So, mm-hmm. but we did discuss and sort of thought not worth the merit
to
proceed.
Okay.
Because this was in the context of more newer countries coming into for adoption.
Yeah,
for
yeah.
them, it makes sense. But somehow the discussion was not to proceed.
Mm. Okay. Might move on then to the content. And Colin, your group, in terms of actually thinking about what do you think the content should be and why?
Yeah, so I suppose on content, it's quite hard to separate content from timing.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of embedded
mm-hmm.
in the whole thing. So a lot of there's a lot of overlap in this discussion that kind of would resonate with some
mm-hmm.
of the discussion earlier. We also talked about, who's this really for? There's different stakeholders, and how do you make that, usable to those stakeholders? I think there's some good practical ideas about making this less of a technical document, more of a almost like a balanced scorecard with kind of consistent measures and consistent, like a table of, different measures that are consistently applied, so it's very transferable and it's very, comparable.
So I'm going to interrupt you there. How do you fit that, if you like, a template
mm-hmm.
with the flexibility that I've heard you all talk about?
So I think that would be the output of all the flexibility. So you could have almost very little in that template. It's not applicable for some of it, but there are certain things that would be kind of themes across all of the impact assessments you'd do. So it's really just to make it usable as well. So obviously there's a very broad constituency for this output. So to make it easy to pick up and look at and often, read a lot of detail, I think that'd be quite powerful. And that was a really good idea that one of the folks in our team had.
Okay.
And it's kind of what you'd do in a normal rational decision. You'd have a simple summary of all the detail and a balanced scorecard in the exec summary. It's kind of bringing that discipline.
Okay. So with the content, and I'm not quite sure where this discussion fits, or whether it's scope or timing or content or, in fact, the actual measurement that we actually use. But the widening, nobody yet has mentioned potentially widening it to wider macroeconomic effects. You'd mentioned it a little bit, and I'm certainly not advocating it, but I'm reassured that no one did mention that. Did you mention it in your group in terms of the scope as to how wide an impact we should be looking at?
We did, and it was we understand the complexity around that and how that's very, very hard to make operable. We did talk about widening it to macroeconomic factors. We also talked about widening it or ensuring that it was consistently factoring stuff like regulatory capital. Because a lot of those things have, big, kind of sometimes pernicious implications. So it's clearly hard for the ISB to see all these different angles and all these different lenses, but certainly having a mindset almost thinking of all these different kind of likely things that may fall out of a standard change would be quite helpful. Because, ultimately, preparers, users have to manage
mm-hmm.
these downstream
mm-hmm.
implications.
Mm-hmm.
Garth, adding from your group on the content?
Yes, I think we had varying views on it as to the extent to which you take into account other areas where it might have impact. For example, on stability, financial stability. I think there were some views that that's a minor issue, others that, standards don't really affect stability, so you've got that issues. And then I think there are also varying views as to the extent to which we have responsibility, or the ISB has responsibility, to consider these other impacts. We're part of a business community. We can't be divorced from these impacts, but the question is to what extent. And I don't think we got to any conclusion on that. The other area that we also had a brief discussion is on the impact of complexity of standards. Is it the standards themselves that are complex, or are they complex to implement? And that can have an impact, and to what extent should that be covered as part of the contents. And then the last issue there was consideration as to whether there should be some type of negative assurance as to whether the proposals in the standard would have a major impact on disrupting industry.
Okay. Stephen?
Yeah, I mean, I think very, very similar views, but I mean, one thing on content we did discuss and I think was very valuable was it's very important to get the first bit right, defining the issue. Mm-hmm. And it was felt that maybe as part of that case study as examples is a lot more powerful than just saying defining an issue. I think when it came to the macroeconomic situations, I think everybody in our group felt that the focus should be on cost benefit. However, you can't be an ostrich here. There is an impact outside. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important that that is acknowledged. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think possibly the way to address it may be through collaboration with other bodies mm-hmm. who would be, so keep them aware of mm-hmm. what's going mm-hmm. on and not do the work yourself, but keep others aware that have that interest. And I think that's one way of acknowledging the fact that these issues are out there. And actually, if it is so material, maybe then you do have to think about it, but not to go and do that work yourself, because I don't think we felt we're not really equipped to do that work. So yeah. it's for others to do that.
Mm-hmm. Suresh?
Yeah, so I think the EA should be a separate standalone document. It has to be, it has an educational value. Therefore, DCs might be challenging to understand, identify effects for some readers. And the linkage between the standards and the EA, cross references to standard would be useful, but of course there are a little bit of mixed views on that, and that they should be cross referenced and need not be. Should we go for the wider economic effect? I think again there is a mixed view. For example, the impact of unemployment rates would be too costly to us to estimate, but we can centralize the efforts, that is regional and national efforts, to assess impact can be different towards the EA. Consider the impact on more diverse stakeholder groups, that is regulators and academics. Early in the due course process, the potential impact, unintended consequences is known. The board should prioritize the issues and decide how much to allocate its effort to address the issue of listening to concerns raised by stakeholders. Also make it explicit. Include a specific section on known issues that could be monitored post issuance of a standard. Consider clarifying between the BCs and EA. So these are some of the specific thoughts that people said that it can be very well perceived, very well educative. So it's not that you are going to articulate the impact on the inflation on macroeconomics in a big way, but do consider that from a prioritization perspective. Do consider that from a perspective of the fact that there are various regions getting impacted in an XYZ form, and therefore the amount of research that is required, the amount of socialization or networking that is required for it, rather than sort of communicating the effect assessment.
Can I just go back to, and you've mentioned it a few times, Suresh, the link or non-link between the basis of conclusions and the effects analysis? Because in some ways, like we talked about the post-implementation review and the post-effects analysis, there is a cross-linkage. In my mind, there is very definitely some form of cross-linkage between the basis of conclusions and EA. You're very clearly saying, or your group came up with and saying, that the effects analysis should be a standalone document, maybe some cross-referencing to the basis of conclusions, but it's different. Yeah. And I think that that's perhaps, I mean, yes, okay, it's getting into the detail, but in some ways it's an important thing to think about as to how the information in the effects analysis versus the basis of conclusions gets out. That's my own personal view, but maybe I'm wrong. Garth, did your group grapple with that, the distinction, and or otherwise?
We did, because one of the early comments was that one of the purposes of the effects analysis should be to show the thought process that has gone through in developing the standard And so I asked the question of the person who did that, how does that tie in with the basis of a conclusion?
That's the thought process.
Because I could see some duplication. Mm-hmm. And the response was that the basis of conclusion would be very much in detail going through different type of issues and saying why the decisions were made from a technical basis. Whereas the effects analysis would perhaps be standing back, looking at it more broadly to say on an overall basis, what impact is the standard likely to have, including what impact it might have on the different industries.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Stephen, did your group
We did, and I think our view was where you have a separate effects analysis, it's part of that proportionality. Mm. When you get below that, we still felt you had to have the effects analysis. We didn't feel concerned that it was within the basis of conclusion, mm-hmm. but we felt it had to be labelled so people could find it and not to just hide it somewhere in there. So, yes, mm-hmm. have it in the basis of mm-hmm. conclusion, but label it so that it's easy mm-hmm. for people to understand, easy for them to find. Mm-hmm. And you know, even beyond that, with other things, there should be an effects analysis section. So even if you didn't happen to have a basis of conclusion, you might just have a paragraph or a sentence mm-hmm. that gave you the effects analysis or the reason why something had been done.
Okay. Colin?
We didn't really touch on where it would be housed. I mean, my own thoughts would be that I understand the logic for proportionality and, you know, have it in the basis of conclusion, but I wonder if that's, you know, not given it the right prominence, even if there's not much to say, maybe having it as a separate document might be easier. Yeah.
And I take from that you're saying you think the effects analysis is a bigger thing for people to be conscious of than the basis for conclusions.
I just think there's one school of thought may be that the basis of conclusion can hide a lot of stuff and you can put a lot of stuff just to cover, you know, almost like an itinerary of things that need mm-hmm. to be covered off. I think having it as a standalone document may have merit in just seeing it stand on its own, and, you know, there may not be very much to say in there because there's not a lot to worry about, but certainly having it there I think would be a degree more prominence is all I would say.
Okay, well, let's move on to the fourth question that we had in front of us then, which is, what methodology do you think we should use for assessing the effects and why? Colin.
Okay. So I think we, again, trying to unbundle this from the rest, I think, again, all linked as far as we can see the question. So again, it's part timing. So I think at the start of the outset of a project, having a more qualitative, strategic view makes a lot of sense. Given that there's quite a few accountants in our team, I think they did kind of hone in having the value of numbers. So something that they could kind of grasp and understand, and even just a table of data. The question or the challenge was put to them that how reliable is that data and how much merit is there in that data. But clearly that was a kind of divergence in views, but the kind of coalescence around having a strategic, qualitative positioning at the start of the process and then becoming more kind of hard facts and hard numbers as it progressed.
Yeah. Suresh?
So, first of all, I think if considering wider economic effects, important to introduce early in the process a methodology earlier in the process. And the second thing was important to differentiate between cost benefits of applying a standard versus considering potential cost and benefit under different scenarios. And the third, I think, which is very unanimous, was ISB should be transparent in making its assumption clear. ISB should not consider the regional public good criteria in EU as ISB is global.
Okay. Yeah, you go, Stephen. Sorry, I'm
I think we felt that the content of the effects analysis or even the methodology should change mm-hmm. as you go through the different stages. And you probably are moving more to quantitative mm-hmm. as you get mm-hmm. to the final part. We did have some big concerns, though, about the bias of a cost-benefit approach, because people mm-hmm. seem to be able to guess what cost is, but it's very difficult to understand what benefit mm-hmm. is. Mm-hmm. People don't tend to put a number to it. And we felt that you can get lost in this. If you're just going to put costs in, people will get numbers. But benefits is very difficult, and the user group who benefit, historically we've had problems reaching out to or getting anything from. And I think we're always going to get the preparers going, this is going to cost. But the people who benefit are really not easy to get to. And I think we've just got to be aware of that bias, because you know it is something we're going to have to deal with. And I don't know the answer, but it's just something we find, you know, it's very difficult to go out to investors and get them to do anything.
Garth?
Yes, as far as the cost and benefits are concerned, I think there was a concern expressed that sometimes it's just a feeling or a view. Is there the ability to have more evidence regarding some of the views? I think there was also the comment made is to what extent can the board itself be learning from the process as it's going along. But as far as flexibility is concerned, the comment was also made, well, perhaps also need to be innovative. Is there something else you can do to get even more benefits out of the current system?
Okay, I'm going to ask the question then around that in terms of the methodology and some of the stuff that you've talked about. Around, before I come to that final question about the three things, around the practical and the feasibility, I think I'm right in saying that each of you had academics in your group who perhaps are more familiar with this kind of effects analysis than the rest of us. Did they issue any warnings or give any advice around some of the conclusions that you've shared sitting here?
Yes. So we're an academic, and I think one of the challenges or the risk that she identified was the lack of transparency around assumptions, because given this is really the art of, you know, very difficult forecasting, it's ex ante and it's very high risk. I think the lack of detailed assumptions could lead it to be questioned. And I think even if you get the wrong answer, but you let your assumptions are reasonable, then you'll get an easier time. If there's no assumption that gets the wrong answer, it's more of a challenge.
So the issue was make sure we disclose the assumptions
the key
that
assumptions
we've made.
Underlying
the transparency.
Analysis. Yeah, the transparency piece. Yeah.
Okay. Suresh?
No, I think pretty much the same, because the data available may not be reliable, and therefore source is important to communicate and not overly depend on those kind of statistical data. And maybe the very fact that you were setting up standard, looking at various expanded implications, could it be detrimental to the very objective of standard setting? So clearly, while the assessment should include prioritization, but not necessarily an effect analysis.
But from your two groups, you know, the academics weren't saying we shouldn't be doing it or we should be doing a hell of a lot more, just some, hey, we've got to be more transparent around that and really think about how we do it.
So whatever is the basis, it should be transparent about in terms of the assumption, whether the discounting rate, interest rates, and so on and so forth. But in terms of the macroeconomics aspects of it, what kind of a swings the economy will experience, that should not be the basis for setting the standard. And hence, we should be knowledgeable, but not necessarily put the effect analysis of that.
Okay. And you too?
Well, I probably should quote from the words here.
Yeah.
And as an academic, he has a good understanding of what's realistic and what's unrealistic. And on quantification, wonders where these requests come from, because the people who are really involved know it's impossible. And I think that is, you know, it doesn't mean you don't do anything, but it means that there isn't a finite way of doing this, and you're only going to get into very broad cost-benefit type analysis in most cases.
I don't recall any specific comment from anyone in our group who might be an academic.
When we open this up, I might ask further questions as to just to pursue that a little bit. I also overheard one comment being made that we should consider benchmarking others that do similar kind of things, effect analysis, even if they don't call them effect analysis, like governments do them and regulatory bodies do them, did, and I can't remember which group it came out of, did other groups consider that in terms of suggesting that the foundation do that as opposed to just consulting us?
I think that comment was made in our group, but it wasn't brought on.
Yeah. I mean, we said EPRAC do these. So, you know, there is somebody else doing this analysis.
Yes.
And I think there was a point there that, you know, one of the issues would be, is doing this effects analysis going to slow down the issue of, and is there a way of doing this earlier in somehow, or even getting inclusion, getting them more inclusive so that that effects analysis is done at an earlier stage and therefore doesn't become a particular issue. And, you know, if EFRAG are doing it, other countries may start to do it themselves, and that may be a problem with endorsement. So I think getting people involved.
Okay. Well, before I go on to that question about, you know, the three things we can do to improve the effectiveness, I think what I've heard is that what we're doing is certainly not broken, in that it seems to be pretty effective effects analysis. However, the things that have come through, to me, key themes that have come through, is it needs to be flexible. And so you don't follow a rule book. It's horses for courses, if you like, or very English expression. You know, flexible, and the timing, though, and it must be embedded through the process as opposed to a separate due process tick box. I personally think that in some ways that has difficulties in itself, as I said before, about potentially opening up for criticism if you're not following a particular process. However, it probably gives a better outcome in terms of that. So, and I'm probably going to ask for some kind of comment from Roberta or Hans, you know, as we conclude this session. I think one of the other key things is that we do need to keep, whether you call it the scope or the content, within bounds, but we have to, we can't be divorced, as you said, Garth, from the wider implications, and that we have to acknowledge that there are wider implications. We can't, you know, say, go away, they don't exist. We have to acknowledge them, but fully say that we're not doing that. And we need to think about the assumptions and making sure that we are totally transparent in what we're doing it, what we're doing, when we're doing it, and disclosing what we've done, and to keep it there. And then finally, the comment that I made is to think about how we extend the scope of the post-implementation review, or look at the scope to ensure that we're also considering post-effects analysis. They're the key things I think I picked up from what we've said. Or I guess the other thing is acknowledging that it's damn hard to do. However much we do, it's damn hard to do. So having said that, as to me the key things, and I'm not saying we're not doing all of those now, but from your groups, with thinking about those things or what you thought about, and having given you half an hour or whatever to think about it. So Colin, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Well, thank you very
from
much.
From your group, are there three things that you think could be done to make the effects analysis more effective?
Other than the points you mentioned.
No, include the points on it. So, yeah. Because they're my points.
They're
I'm
not
now
allowed,
asking your
group. Okay, so three's a bit of a stretch. I think.
And you're not allowed to copy me that.
I think one of the things was, again, one of the original comments I made was about making it like consistent in how the output looks. So something that somebody can pick up very quickly and see, oh, I can see the key issues with this standard. I think that's helpful just to make it more digestible and more usable. I do like the idea of the post-implementation review being considered in as part of this process, because I do think it acts as a good control to make sure the effective analysis, which is well considered and I'm sure went through due process, but it may well be that something there that needs to be re-exposed and revisited. Now I'm stretching. Yeah, I think proportionality is important. I mean, I think the ISB would benefit from having a certain framework that says all standards will be subject to effects analysis. That being said, there will be proportionality overlaid on top of that. So within a framework, you can't be challenged because you're within your framework, but it's proportionate, so your resources aren't getting put to the wrong use.
Okay, Suresh?
You know, one important thing which we didn't discuss is with respect to, in our group, it has to be an identifiable, easily accessible document. Very few were informed of EA in the members' jurisdiction. EA needs to be more communicate. There has to be more superior communication and dissemination recommended. You know, for example, the jurisdiction Indonesia, they didn't even know that there in a document like that exists. So, an initiative like this, which all of us are appreciating, there has to be much more intense communication so that people get the value of it. So, like we said, whatever we have seen in the document, very good, and therefore, two, three things is. A, it should be a default option, which means more often rather than less often to be coming out with any kind of changes. B, it should be a standalone independent document with a little bit of cross-references while, because it has a strong educational value, linkages with the standard, because ability to understand the standard becomes better, and it should be released before the accounting standard itself so that the understanding of the implications are very well done. And the second thing is the timing of it, which means engaging with the EA analysis assessment even before, at the time of draft and as well as at the time of discussion paper itself. Earlier, the engagement that much better. And the post-effect analysis, if there could be some solution to be able to incorporate that. And the third thing clearly is communicating the assumptions of the cost and the benefit as to how did you tabulate that to be more transparent becomes important.
Okay.
These, I think, the three areas which can make the document, the initiative, much more effective.
Okay. Stephen?
I think probably a point there, but start early, and there should be a due process around the proportionality in terms of how you actually look at things. I think probably a second point is there should be different approaches for different standards or for different changes. And that might be to the extent of using other people, other relevant parties. It might even be to have an advisory group to look at the effects analysis. But I think it should be a different approach based on the factors that have been looked at, and probably part of that due process would be to establish that. I think my final point was the one I raised before, which I think it's important that the ISB walks the talk and actually does this. And I said to the group, and Nick's going to look at me because he probably doesn't want me to say it, but you know, I saw the announcement on common control transactions, and I was stunned. You know, everybody's doing merger accounting, yet the ISB is going to start by using IFRS 3. But there was no explanation, and I think that was the only issue missing. It wasn't the fact that they'd done that, but there was no explanation. And it's obviously in an environment where I'm from, where common control transactions are the norm, it was very concerning. And a lot of people I've had messages going, what's going on, what's going on, what are we going to do? And it would have been very easy just with a small, short sentence to have stopped that. So I think it's got to become part and parcel of everything, not just we're going to put it in the standard. When things are announced or decisions are made, there should be some justification as part of that.
Okay. Garth, your three things from your group?
Our first point was that there needs to be clarity on its purpose and where it's positioned, so that people are aware of what its purpose is.
So that's for effects analysis generally,
yes.
Or effects analysis for a particular
standard?
No,
effects analysis generally.
Okay.
In that, I think if you had to ask people, they would give you different views on what it's supposed to do.
Yep. You four were all remarkably consistent, I might add, so well done.
and the second point is that it's something that should be built as you go through the process rather than being tailored for the individual components. And then the third point is that there should be some link between that and the post-implementation review afterwards.
Okay, so I am now going to open it up. Well, actually, I might just say, do any of the four of you have anything further that you'd like to say that we haven't covered, that you think it's important that, even if it is something that you discussed and dismissed and said, no, definitely shouldn't do this, out of your groups? Okay. I'm then going to open it up to the floor. Obviously, you were all within these groups. For you to make any comments that you don't think has been brought up by the discussion here, or you'd like to dig into a little bit more deeply. And then I might ask Roberta Hans, is waving his hand around, to make any comments and perhaps have further discussion to elaborate on further things. So anything from the floor? You were all obviously stunned, and I don't have my table plan in front of me. And whoever that is, please speak. Eric. And I'm half blind.
Okay, yeah. Well, thank you very much for the presentation from the outcomes of the group discussions, which were very similar, I think, that everybody seems to agree that doing an effects analysis as a separate exercise towards the end of the standard setting process is not the right thing. So I think everybody agrees that this needs to be a lift-through process along and during the standard setting. My two or three comments. I think it would be very important, really, at the beginning of the project to have a proper description of what the problem is, what the dimension of the problem is, and why doing nothing would not be a good solution. I'm saying this because that's what I have to do myself when we propose European legislation. But I think that's a very helpful exercise. So that's one comment. Of course, from our perspective, we have the EU public goods, which is a pretty broad, not totally defined concept. So the broader the effects analysis could be, certainly capturing possible implications on financial stability, the better it would be for us. Then a final observation. And I'm not certain it was mentioned that wherever possible, if you can get some quantitative data or an evidence base, that would be really welcome. I know how difficult it is, also based on own experience, but not having it, and when I reread the IFRS 16, for example, effects, then you see qualifications like the ISB expects that, the ISB considers this, the ISB acknowledges that. Well, that's great to hear, but what is the basis for you thinking that? That does not always come clearly through in the effects analysis. Having said that, I said it also in the group, I give the board credits for at least expanding, looking into the broader economic effects, although the effects analysis consultative group did not propose to do that. So that's a very good thing. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Eric. And I certainly think we did cover off a number of those. And obviously the evidential thing was, to me, around that, you know, putting in what assumptions we have used, and that's come through there. Oh, John, go for it.
Yeah, there we go. This might already exist, but it's a minor point. But is there anywhere in a brief exposition of the relationship between effects analysis, basis for conclusion, and post-implementation reviews? Because, I mean, anybody coming to this cold would sort of say, well, what's the difference between an effects analysis and a PIR? So that could already be there, in which case ignore this.
I think that actually fits with the comment that Garth made, coming from his group, about the clarity of purpose of the EA generally, and some of the questions that I probed as to what the differences are. So that, and I don't know the answer, John, to the question either as to whether it is clear, but maybe something on the website that very clearly says these are the differences between them, or these are the similarities, or this is what you expect to see, so that people know exactly what that would be a good thing to do to avoid any conclusion. Hey, Pierre.
Yeah, I want to underline a couple of things have been said. I think going back to what Eric mentioned in terms of the potential problems that you can find, I think it was mentioned as well, I think should be a process, And I think the process should have enough flexibility, even I want to be very clear because was said in the group, that should have similar points on identifying the specific points or the specific elements that might affect the implementation of certain standards, and then on the effect and effect analysis, because not every standard has the same implication when you implement them in the sectors. For instance, we're talking about macroeconomics, and the macroeconomics may be very different with one standard or with the other. So I think that's something that definitely I will consider. And also, I just want to say that we feel that definitely should be an ongoing process. It has been repeated several times, but I think it should be an ongoing process all along the definition of the standard. And then also on the post-implementation review in the standards that are already out, should be reviewed that and incorporated into the post-implementation review. Should be like a one, I would say, consolidated post-implementation review, and one of the elements will be the effects analysis. Mm-hmm. Which should be, to me, it shouldn't be a separate exercise. Yeah. It should be part of the whole post-implementation.
And I think that's come through from the group, so you're reinforcing that. Thanks.
Thank you.
That. Olaf?
Thank you. I think I was just going to maybe, first of all, say I think the effects analysis document is useful in the sense, especially in the sense that it gives an indication of a range of companies impacted and the type of effect it can have, and that in itself is useful. But I think I really subscribe to the view that this is something that, in terms of the understanding the cost and the especially potentially unintended consequences and macroeconomic effects, that's really something that's only useful if you do it early on and throughout the process. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to clarify that I think sometimes there's a misunderstanding between the discussion on the macroeconomic effects, because you could have a discussion that says if there are very significant unintended consequences, we shouldn't make this improvement on the assumption that the improvement is correct and it has some consequences people don't like. But I think there's also the other problem, which I think is the one we mainly talk about, certainly from the insurance industry, is that the issue is not that the improvement is correct and has an unintended effect. It's that maybe we haven't quite got it good enough yet to capture the real economics of the business. And in some cases, you have to at a certain point just stop and say, well, it's good enough, and we just have to move forward. But where there are significant unintended consequences for those particular issues, there you need to maybe reprioritize and say, because of the unintended consequence of not getting it good enough, maybe we need to spend more time and improve it to a point where we can avoid these unintended consequences. And I think that's where the potential usefulness of looking at the macroeconomic issues comes in, and especially could avoid them only being dealt with later on through, for example, the endorsement process within Europe.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, because we didn't really talk about how we dealt with, if you like, if the effects analysis does show that the result of the effects analysis, which is what you're talking about there, whether it's unintended or otherwise. Yep, okay. Giuseppe?
Those are very, very difficult issues. And talking about macroeconomic impacts and estimating...
Can you put on the speaker?
Speaker. Yep.
Very difficult issues, and talking about macroeconomic impacts and estimating them with any degree of confidence is extremely challenging. So I certainly don't have a solution, but I think the bias of overconfidence that you can find very often in investment management should not be something that we engage in. So we should approach these difficult problems with a lot of humility, and sometimes having a complicated, sophisticated model is no guarantee that it works. I come from physics, and I kind of appreciate the difference between physics and economics. And in economics, I'm afraid we know very little. Mm-hmm. And we should be very much be aware of it. Sorry for being so blunt.
I think, Giuseppe, that is a wonderful conclusion to this discussion, and I now ask Hans to perhaps make some observations without necessarily drawing conclusions as to what the team is going to do around what advice has been provided.
Well, I think this was a very rich and useful discussion. A bit much to take in, so just some first reactions. I agree with everybody who says it has to be a continuous process. And to tell you the truth, I think it has always been a continuous process, except it has been implicit rather than explicit. I don't think the board ever started working on a standard without having a very strong idea that there is a problem to be solved. But we have often made that problem only explicit towards the very end of the process. And that is not very useful in trying to convince the outside world. And I also think if you force yourself to define the problem in the very beginning, you might work in a much more focused way. And one concrete example that I would like to give you is that only towards the very end of the effect analysis of leases, we found out that in the current in the previous standard, 85% of all leases were off balance sheet. We knew there was a problem, but we didn't know how big it was. And if we had known that from the very beginning, it would have been much easier to convince the outside world we need to do something to do something here. So I think that we are going to work on an extractive industries standard. I am sure that most of the industry is going to tell us, please don't do anything. We are fine. So we really have to make concrete from the very beginning, are there problems, and if what are those, and to what extent are investors or creditors hindered by that, and we have to solve that. Well, I think we did in this respect a fantastic job with insurance. I don't think that anybody who reads the effect analysis on insurance can maintain that there is no problem, that the current state of affairs in accounting for insurance industry is something that we can live on with for another 20 years. Then I also agree with everybody who said that, but conclusion is we need to do more work at the beginning and more explicit work at the beginning. I agree with everybody who says it needs to be flexible, because we do also lots of tiny little bits work. Yes, there is a problem, perhaps not so big, but it's really irritating. Can we solve it? No, we don't need a huge effect analysis for that. Then can we be more quantitative, for example, about costs? Well, if EFREC can ask a bureau to do some research on implementation costs, perhaps we can do that too, and then we can do it for the whole world and not just for Europe. So perhaps it's not such a bad idea that we do that ourselves in an earlier stage as we finalize the standard. So that's something that we should probably look at. But I also agree with everybody that we have to be very careful in what can be quantified. Any bureau, any research bureau that tells you that they can quantify the macroeconomic effects of a standard, they should be out of business. That is totally impossible. It is even almost impossible to quantify the macroeconomic effects of IFRS as a whole. There have been studies about the effects on the cost of capital of the introduction of IFRS in Europe and other parts of the world. The results are all over the place. They are largely favorable, but precise, not at all. You can only demonstrate that what everybody knew, that it probably has a downward effect on the cost of capital, but how much nobody knows. So we have to be very, very careful, and I really don't think we can be much more precise than we are now. The LISA standard, it is indeed, we have to say these things like it is, the ISB expects that probably more companies, instead of leasing machinery, are probably going to buy it, because that might, now that the accounting advantage has gone, it's probably cheaper to buy it. So we can, that's the only thing we can say. How many? Nobody knows, except perhaps the leasing industry, who predicted the end of the world for the leasing industry, but this is really extremely difficult, if not impossible, to do. Then what are all the issues that you would like to test in an effect analysis? I think what we do is very sensible. We describe what are the main changes that preparers will be confronted with. What does that do to their balance sheet, or on the average, what does it do to their income statement? There we can be relatively precise. I think we can even, I have absolutely no issue in, for an important standard like insurance, to make a qualitative assessment of what it will mean for financial stability. I strongly believe this standard contributes hugely to financial stability, because an industry where cost accounting is still prevalent in a current low interest rate environment, obviously something needs to be changed there, and the new standard is going to be a huge improvement, much more insight in all sorts of risks, which is very good for stability. I have no quarrel with. For most standards, the whole stability issue will not be very important, but for something like insurance or IFRS 9, clearly that is the case. So I have absolutely no problem with that. But, I mean, in the direction of Europe keeps on adding and adding criteria. Every constituent is free to do so, of course. But but at a certain point, you know, how much can you really measure? And long-term investing, yeah, important. Sustainability, important. But what is the impact of accounting standards on sustainability? Isn't it a bit far removed? And every criteria that you make can be used, but it can also be abused. And I know that some of those companies are also always complaining about long-term investment and how IFRS discourages that. They tend to be highly leveraged companies with, vulnerable to volatility in the financial statements. So there is an issue there too. Anyway, that's for Europe to decide, and for other countries to decide. I would suggest that, you know, we have to keep this feasible. We have to keep the exercise feasible. Let's not introduce precision where precision cannot be given. But I think that we can do a lot more than we have done in the past. I think we are well on our way, and I'm glad to see that that is acknowledged. And I do think that we can make further improvements, especially in terms of explicitness early on. So I think we can improve on what we have, and what I heard today is certainly very useful. But I would really like to study all the comments that have been made. But these are my first knee-jerk reactions.
Okay, I think that's fabulous, Hans, and I love your knee-jerk reactions, but I also love the fact that you are going to, with the team, consider what has come up, and I think that there are detailed notes, and I'll say congratulations and thank you to the staff that took the notes and, disseminated them in such a quick fashion that the team could sit up here with a summary of what was done in each of their groups, and that will go back to the staff and to Hans and for further, you know, understanding and thought process as to what is there. But I think that there are some, as I said, you know, it's clear to me from what the group has said is that it isn't broken. However, there are some things that can be done to improve it, and already Hans has acknowledged, you know, some of those things. So it is a process of where to from here, and we look forward to, if you like, having added some value and seeing what comes out of the discussion. So on that note, I suggest that we break for 15 minutes or so, and then I think I'm right in saying, and I haven't brought my program up here, we have the summary of the conferences breakout sessions is next. So I need to hopefully be able to spend the next 15 minutes thinking what the hell I'm going to ask you. So thank you very much, and well done, and thank you to the four chairs.